Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a City Council meeting on March 11th, 2013. And we appreciate you being with us. And as we go through our agenda, if you'd like to speak on any of the items on our agenda, you certainly can do so. Just raise your hand, let us know that you'd like to speak at the appropriate time, and we'd be glad to have you speak. And as we begin, we'll start with council prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance.
For all who will, let us bow our heads in prayer. Our God and Creator, we stand before you this evening to give thanks and praise for your grace, your mercy, and your love. Dear Father, you've given us grace to pray with one heart and one voice, and you promise to hear our prayer if two to three who agree and believe in you are gathered in your name, that you would fulfill the prayers and wishes of your people for whatever is best for us and your kingdom. Father, we pray not just for our leaders, but for our state and our national leaders. Help someone to emerge as a spokesperson to bring about peace and unity in our country according to your will. Unite all of us in your truth and love as we show your love to one another. Father, we pray for this community and all who live and work here, those that are in need, those who are sick and the poor and the hungry, those that are oppressed, those that are in prison, those that are victims of crime, those that are unemployed. We know that you are aware of their needs and can answer their prayers, and we ask that you send an angel to come into their lives and provide solutions to their problems. And we pray for peace and comfort for those who are suffering. As leaders, dear Father, on City Council, give us the strength and wisdom to serve them. Father, we know that we are sinners in your sight, and we confess our sins and pray and ask forgiveness in our daily living. And Heavenly Father, we pray for ourselves and all that we do in your name. Be with us in our business discussions this evening. Guide us with your wisdom and grant us grace as we work and serve in your name. Grant us peace and unity according to your will as you guide and govern us by your Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get into our business, we'd like to introduce and recognize a young man who's working on his Eagle Scout badge, and also his mother is with him. Russell, would you like to stand? And that's Russell McElroy, and we appreciate what you're doing so much. It is a very important thing to do, and that's something you'll have with you all the time, and it'll really make a difference in your life. And to his mother, we thank you too very much for what you've done in the family.
Mr. Mayor, I don't think there's an Eagle Scout around who didn't become an Eagle Scout without the help of Mom.
Oh, that's right.
That's why she'll get a very special badge when he becomes an Eagle Scout, and it will be one that was well earned. Thank you, Mom.
Absolutely. What troop is it? I didn't catch that.
126.
126. Very good. Well, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you.
Mayor,
yes.
Mr. Mayor, if I may ask, there are two individuals from Leadership Aiken. It's their first time here and at our council meeting, so if they'd stand and introduce themselves, that would be great.
Who are they, please?
Three, four.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
All right.
Would you like to tell us your name?
I'm Mary Walton.
Well, thank you very much, too, for being with us. That's a very important organization. Okay, the first item of business is the minutes. Consideration of the minutes from the February 25th, 2013 regular meeting. Are there any comments, changes, what have you?
I'd like to get some clarification on page 26, if Ms. Sarah could pull that up there. And this has to do with the testing issues. It'd help if we could all read it, I think. Yes. If you go to the fifth paragraph, it'll be the second sentence, if you will, where it's the first sentence starts with Mr. Pierce. Then it says, he said the city does have some control in the matter, as the city wants the roads to be developed according to city regulations. The developer stated that he is going to meet city regulations. The data that Mr. Morris collected, and which Mr. Pierce put in the February information to the residents, doesn't have all of the compaction tests that are required in our specifications. And Mr. Pierce and I discussed this one day towards the end of the last week after the previous city council meeting. And I guess my concern is, how are we going to meet the regulations if we don't have all the tests that are required? And the specific one was more than that, but over the sewer lines, our specification requires compaction as the sewer line is backfilled. And there are no test reports available on that. So my concern is, how is he going to meet that requirement that meets regulation if no tests were made?
Well, I know that staff is meeting with the developer this week, so that question will be asked at that time. Okay.
And I think that's a real important one, because we've had on previous experience, not only with roads in Woodside but other places, after about 4 to 7 years, the road begins to depress in the middle over the sewer line. And as we start looking for it, we find the same issue. And I think that's an important point, that if we don't have that, how do we get there? It was said, and I asked the question, and the developer stated there were some test wells driven, but the data for the test wells wasn't forthcoming from whoever drilled them. And it had to be some professional outfit. Test well, you drill it in the road and see if there's any water under there. That's still an open question.
I do know that they took some core samples, Mr. Edder, about 3 feet deep. And, again, at the meeting this week, we're going to be very interested to see those as well.
I think these are important. And then the next, the other clarification I wanted to make, once we get the proposal from the developer and we have our independent person look at it, We have a sentence in our specification that says we can ask for other tests. And since it'd be our specification, we may have to pay for them. But we need to get some tests made independent of what CSRA did. And I think that's very important, and they need to be in the right place. We have a good consultant. He would know where to go and get those. So these are just some clarifications I think are going to get important when we get that document from the developer.
Yes, sir, and I have discussed that with staff, and that's our intended approach. Okay. We have to get information in hand and then know what our next steps are.
Okay, very good. I just wanted to be sure we were aware of that, so thank you.
I'm still a little confused now, which doesn't take much. I thought that the developer knew the test that they were going to do and was going to do the test, and then we were going to take those test results and give them to an independent expert.
That is correct.
Okay, so there's no proposal or anything. I'm confused by your
proposal. There's information.
Yeah, I didn't think there was.
Well, but right now, some of the tests that this, I feel sure a qualified consultant is going to ask to see this test per specification.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And right now, we don't have those.
Okay.
And they were supposed to be made as the work progresses on this. So that was my only clarity. If that's working on it, it'll be interesting to see on April 22nd. So that was my
plan on coming back on April 22nd.
So there won't be an update at the next meeting of your meeting this week. You're coming back on April 22nd?
It was April 22nd.
April 22nd. Okay, thank you.
So I'll move that we accept them.
Okay. All right. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Pass this unanimously. Under old business, the first item of business is appointments and discussion of appointments to the city boards, commissions, and committees. Mr. Pearson.
Mayor, and I was remiss at the start of the meeting. Councilmember Deeks wanted to be with us tonight, but she's had this flu that's been going around, unfortunately, so she's not able to be with us. Councilmember Ebner recommended that Catherine Thomas be appointed to the Arts Commission. That term would expire April 11, 2015. We have 13 other vacancies to fill, and we have this appointment to consider tonight, and then whether or not any other appointments council members may have.
Okay, do we have a motion and second for approval?
So move.
Second, sir.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, other nominations?
I have a nomination, but I'd like to ask the city manager. I've had concerns regarding the Arts Commission. Do you want to talk about that now or later in the meeting?
Well, we could do that at the end of the meeting.
Okay, that's fine.
This is actually for the appointment.
Then I would like to renominate Stephen Mueller to the Accommodations Tax Committee, please.
And I would like to renominate Tina McCarthy to the Accommodations Tax Committee also.
And I'd like to renominate Regina Brackett for the Accommodations Tax Committee, and then Sharon Brown for the Arts Commission.
Okay. Any others? Okay, very good. They'll be on the agenda for next meeting.
Yes, sir. We'll put that on for the 25th.
Okay. Item 2 is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex 0.5 acres owned by Dale Peterson and Andrea Wells, located at 912 Backspell Road, and zone it limited business.
Mr. Mayor, I've actually had an email today from Susan Hook, who is Susan Perico. They have asked that this matter be carried over to the May 13 meeting of council. And I checked with our city attorney. Uh-huh. What we would need is just a motion to carry the agenda item over to May 13, and that would save having to have two readings again.
Okay. Do we have a move?
Second, sir.
Okay. We have a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Carry over. New business, one item, approval of the State Infrastructure Bank Intergovernmental Agreement. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. We do have the agreement in the agenda packet, and just so there isn't any confusion about this, I have provided council with a link to our original application to the Infrastructure Bank. We talked about several projects that involved certainly the Hitchcock widening, University Parkway widening, and turn lanes on Doherty Road, but there were many other projects included in our original application that was done to the State Infrastructure Bank a number of years ago. Those projects in today's dollars total $101.9 million. The agreement the council has in your packet is for the $13 million that the State Infrastructure Bank is providing. $900,000 of that goes to the turn lanes, a portion to Hitchcock Parkway widening, and a portion to the University Parkway widening. As part of the 2010 capital project sales tax referendum, the citizens approved $4 million for the Hitchcock Parkway widening and $3 million for the University Parkway widening. That was between Richland Avenue and Trolley Line Road. While we don't have specifics on the projects, we are in the process of putting together some concept plans that we can have some public meetings about. As you know, with the Hitchcock Parkway widening, there have been concerns after the November public information session that SCDOT did at South Aiken High School. They have met with their consultants. You have a letter coming from Ron Patton with SCDOT explaining that they plan on another public information session. We anticipate that will happen sometime in the summer, as far as trying to keep the Hitchcock project within the right-of-way boundaries. So just so there's no confusion, there is not a final design for any of these projects at this time. We presented a concept with the level of service studies that our on-call traffic engineer, Roger Dyer, had provided, and we updated that with the 2010 figures when we appeared before the State Infrastructure Bank in December of 2011. We appeared before the full board, that was the subcommittee, the full board in January of last year, and they did approve the $13 million. In order for us to have this grant money, which does not have to be repaid, it's grant money for the project, we have to sign this agreement. If we don't sign it, we don't get the $13 million. So what we needed to obtain from council tonight was approval of the signing of the agreement by you, Mayor. They do require the body to approve the document and have the designated authority for the local governing body sign. So that's what's on the agenda tonight, is approval of the Infrastructure Bank agreement for signature by you, Mayor.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second that we can discuss it?
I so move because of the grant funds.
All right, I'll second it. Okay, discussion.
I have a question on this. By agreeing to this, accepting the grant for $13 million, but there's not a corresponding concept plan in place. I mean, that's still fluid as far as the design goes. Are they going to buy extra property to go outside the current right-of-way, or are they going to restrict themselves to stay totally inside the right-of-way? That's still up in the air as far as I could tell. Now, I may be wrong, but...
No, you're absolutely correct about that. Okay. And I think the... you know, we had that public information session in November at South Aiken. Mm-hmm. You know, DOT showed they were coloring way outside of the lines. And quite understandably, the residents in the area are very concerned that, you know, some backyards were going to go, some folks were going to lose their pools, and some folks were going to lose a corner of their house if that design was used. So, you know, there was a good turnout at that meeting. There have been a lot of follow-up emails and other meetings and information shared with DOT. And this latest letter from Mr. Patton shows that they are focusing now on going back within the existing right-of-way. What they've categorized, what they trotted out in November, was a worst-case scenario.
Okay. Yeah. I just, you know, along with this, I think we ought to make a point to alert the public on how they can make their voices heard. Are there going to be any meetings? Are there going to be any more dog and pony shows by DOT, you know, where people actually can correspond? A lot of people feel like, you know, they put their comments in, so forth. Everybody nods and then just gets totally ignored.
No, and it's not going to be ignored. And you're absolutely right. There will be an opportunity for more public input because there's no design at this time. There's only been a concept. And the good thing about the November meeting is there was such an overwhelming outpouring of information that now DOT is going back to their consultants and saying, no, we need a concept plan that works within the existing right-of-way.
Okay,
yes,
great.
Yes,
and the reason that I made the motion to support this is because of your statement that there's no final design for these areas right now.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Are we bound by anything by agreeing to this?
Terms of the agreement.
You are bound by the terms of the agreement. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, and certainly we are committed to do the projects. And you have 1 cent sales tax money to go towards those projects. So we would be required to spend our money. That's the 1 cent sales tax money, but it's the STP, the STIP funds that the Arts Commission has designated for the project as well.
Well, there's a couple of things. The reason I ask the question, the city shall be responsible for all engineering, right-of-way acquisition, and construction of the project. And that's not normal. That's not the case on Silver Bluff, at least, I don't think. I think the SCDOT is doing that.
Well, and again, with the State Infrastructure Bank money, so many times the projects are new construction. This is widening of an existing South Carolina highway. We do not have to have the SCDOT build the portion of the Hitchcock Parkway widening with the State Infrastructure Bank money. We can hire a traffic engineering firm to design it and build it. So, in other words, whether DOT does it or whether a private consultant with an engineer of record does it, the city is ultimately responsible for the project to make sure that it's done. They don't want to advance money for design and then the project just stop.
So if the city hires money, is that an engineer? Is the money for that engineer out of this money that we're getting from the infrastructure bank?
Now, you're talking about the Hitchcock Parkway widening?
Well, we can talk about that one, sure. It makes it easier to keep on one road.
Right. Well, the Hitchcock Parkway widening, actually, DOT has URS Engineering doing the entire design from Silver Bluff all the way to Highway 1. So that's with the STIP money. So there will be additional funds needed, of course, to actually build the project.
Oh, should that stipulation be in this document that we're approving?
They won't. I did have that discussion, Mr. Duarte. I think that's a fair question. But frankly, it's kind of like when you go to have a mortgage on your house. If we want the money from the infrastructure bank, we have to sign this agreement form. And again, whether it's DOT or a private consultant, that will be done. I mean, that's what we did with the East Gate extension, for example. We had those contracts, and they actually did the construction. We supervised that.
Okay. Well, excuse me, Rich. Okay, Dick brings up an interesting point. If, in fact, it's the city's responsibility, is it the council that's going to approve the final concept plan for what happens on Hitchcock Parkway?
Oh, we would definitely bring it to council. We would definitely have a public hearing.
Yes. Well, we are the ones that are going to approve the council plan. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you've got 1 cent sales tax money, and you reserve the right to order projects. And, okay. You know, frankly, we've got a lot of public interest.
Yeah.
And, you know, DOT, in your letter you'll see from Mr. Patton, DOT is concerned that we're trying to do an independent track with this project. We're not. We're just trying to make sure that the public has every opportunity to provide input. And we don't want the public or the citizens to think they're being ignored, because that's just not the case at all.
That's my concern.
Yes, sir. It's a very valid concern.
And they're not going to ask URS to design the project until the community approves what we want.
Well, it's kind of a two-stage, if you will. They do a concept plan. Then once the concept plan, we've had the final public input on that, then they actually design the road.
So it's a concept plan that we'll be looking at this summer.
Yes, yes. Again, to get the comments. And it's a great thing they did the public information hearing early on in the project, because they were coloring so far outside the lines.
Would you like to speak?
Go ahead, and then I'll comment. Ms. Pencap, go ahead.
Please go up here. Just give us your name.
Councilmember Price, I think, had a quick question.
Where do you want me?
Right here, ma'am. Right by that projector. Right. There's here? A microphone that'll pick you up.
My name is Carol Pencavage. I'm the vice president of our church council at St. Paul Lutheran Church, which is located on Route 118. The question I have, on page 64 of the approval of state infrastructure bank document, under the definitions, when it defines the project, it talks about the scope of the work set forth in the application. And my question is, what is the scope of the work in the application regarding Hitchcock Parkway? Was it defined in any way to stipulate that it needed to be four lanes or anything like that?
It was defined as a road widening project, and I've gone back to try to find out if there was a number of lanes provided. I haven't found that yet. It is a two-lane road. So it is possible that the infrastructure bank is thinking it's a four-lane project.
Well, I think that's critical, because if we don't know that, I mean, you're essentially, this document causes you to agree to these terms.
If I may, ma'am, to finish my sentence, the fact of the matter is, we didn't turn in a scope of work to the state infrastructure bank. We had a general description of the project. And again, with the concern of the residents and certainly the concern of the church, concern of the commercial businesses that came out to that public information session, at this point, there's not a defined scope of work, because we're trying to figure out the concept for the widening project. So with the state infrastructure bank, we're not locked into building a certain kind of road by any means. To the extent that we work on a concept plan, we get the public input, and if there's a project that is different in the description that we submitted to the infrastructure bank, we would go back to the infrastructure bank and get a clear delineation of what the exact scope would be to make sure we're good.
Okay, so by signing it, it doesn't say that we have to commit to whatever was in that. That was my concern.
No, the real purpose of this agreement, and I, of course, discussed it with the city attorney and with the staff for the infrastructure bank, they don't want to give us money for a road like, for example, for widening Hitchcock Parkway, and then the money is sent down or the money is drawn against, and all of a sudden we have like a widened Whiskey Road instead. It's project specific. But there is no scope of work at this time because it has to go through the process of the public input and the design.
Okay. We've expressed our concerns about the road in other forums, so I just wanted to make sure in terms of this document that the application didn't have specifics in it about how wide it would be or anything like that.
It really doesn't. Okay. We did a comprehensive presentation in the submission that was done back 2007, 2008, and we talked about our north side, Highway 19. We talked about the 118 bypass from 19 all the way around to Whiskey Road, kind of south and west and then back east. We talked about Anderson Pond Road. That project's been completed. We talked about connecting Whiskey Road with Powder House Road and with Centennial Drive. We talked about the Doherty Road, which we've done the corridor study for. So there are a number of projects that add up to that $101 million. And we're talking about many years worth of projects to do. We focused on these initial three as projects that we had talked about the longest, putting those first in the queue, kind of first in, first out. And the Infrastructure Bank Subcommittee and Full Committee was very complimentary that not only had some of the projects been completed, but that the citizens had voted for the 1 cent capital project sales tax money. So there was a local match. And that's why the grant money came to us, because the citizens had spoken in favor of the projects, but also voted in favor of committing local funds to the project as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Just go back to I sent Mr. Pierce a half a dozen or so questions. He answered all of those, and I appreciate you doing that.
Yes, sir.
A couple of clarifications, and this is on page 68 of the minutes.
Of the agenda packet?
Of the agenda, of the agenda package. And I can understand why that the bank would want the city to be in charge of it. And, of course, some of these things, if you do right-of-way acquisition, you have to use eminent domain, that becomes a political nightmare. And hopefully we don't get into that. There's some, you know, if you take a couple of feet, one thing, but we take 20 or 30 feet, another. So I think that's going to be a real important thing when it comes back to council for approval. Now, and you mentioned that, and I go back to page 68 where it said the design and construction specifications and standards must be approved by STDOT.
SCDOT, yes.
Yeah. Can we just, we as the city, and I'm using us as a group, can we just have SCDOT do the whole job, or are we required to do something else, or do you know enough about it to know yet?
The answer to your question is SCDOT can do the project. SCDOT does not have to do the project.
But we could authorize them to do it.
We could.
Okay.
But budget's an issue if.
Well, that, I'm
go that
coming
route,
to money
so
in
that,
just a minute.
Yeah.
The stretch of road Hitchcock has three bad places on it, and one of them's at Coal Creek Nurseries, just past that at 421. Since I've been here, they repaired it twice, and that must be a wormhole there because it just keeps on going down. And I think we got another one there where Hounds Lake Road ties into Whiskey right there behind the church. That keeps falling in. You know, it's been repaired since I was here in the 80s.
I'm sorry.
You know, where Hounds Lake Road comes into Hitchcock? I forgot the road on the other side.
Trail Ridge is by the one by the church.
No, I'm on down the
Hounds Lake Boulevard on one side and Varden on the other.
You come down the hill from Trail Ridge towards town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bard and then Hounds Lake. Bard, on the
yeah,
southern
Bard and
side.
Hounds Lake. And they repair that one all the time. So that tells you there's, we call them wormholes. They're probably a better geological term. But they're going to need to be repaired forever, even with a new road. And my concern is there with SCODOT. I have my faith in their budget control and their management of projects is not very high. And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. That's pretty well across the state.
I think you've got several folks very much in support of what you're saying.
So now we do have to meet their standards.
Exactly.
And, you know, they could take the position, well, I'm going to hold your feet to the line. You're going to do everything as I say and be sure the grass is 2 inches apart. The second thing is where it says that the city will cover any extra cost.
Mm-hmm. That's our match.
And that one really bothers me, and I guess how do we clarify, can we hold a contingency back, like 10% of the $28 million or something? Because road projects historically become an issue because you never know when you start digging in the dirt what you're going to find. And, we, you know, I can cite those across the city. And how do we be sure that we don't mortgage the future if we have a CPST
before? Right. And again, that, you know, the city attorney will comment on that. You can't bind future councils. We have an existing budget, and certainly the scope of work will be critical. As far as the retainage, we've done that in contracts with the city before, and it's worked very well.
I think we would, and I don't know if we, when we get into, Ms. Pencavage and Mr. Mahokey said, when we get into authorizing this, and if y'all could give me some ideas now, how do we word our agreement to this that we're looking to have at least a, I'm going to use the word 5 or 10%. My rule of thumb is 10% on road work because you can spend 10% of $28 million fixing one hole in a road. Can we do that kind of thing, and that would be kosher to do that?
I mean, we've done that on other public projects. We would just have to look. We can provide that detail when it's time to sign the contract, whether it's we wind up going with DOT or we go with a private consultant who would have an engineer of record.
That
would be a contract term.
Would the State Infrastructure Bank be okay with that?
You know, really, as long as the road gets built and it meets DOT specifications, they really don't get into the minutiae. They don't go down in the weeds about how you contract to do it. They just want to make sure at the end of the day, when the draws have been made against the Infrastructure Bank money, there's a road they can point to and say that money went in that road.
Well, I guess I'm real concerned about mortgaging the future. And I don't know how binding something that we do, if it's not this year, maybe next year, 2 years, for 2018 or 2020 or 2022. That's a long ways away. And is there some mechanism when we get into approval of the concept plan for installation, we probably have some kind of cost from SCDOT or a consultant?
We should, we should have a construction estimate, absolutely.
Now, if he says it's $28.5 million, we shouldn't believe him. We say, no, you got to go to 26 or 25 because we need some running room there. Now, I'm putting that as a thought process on the table for us to think about for the future. It's a good deal, don't get me wrong, but I'm real concerned about the future money.
Well, we need to make sure we stay within budget. Absolutely.
I mean,
we have a finite set of money to spend, so you negotiate through the contract. The budget influences the scope of the project. The project doesn't influence the expenditure of money.
I understand that very well.
That brings up an interesting point. If we don't really know the concept, how do we know it's going to be 28.5?
And again, it's estimated at this point, and once we have the final concept, that's when we put the construction estimates on it. But we know what our budget is.
Well, yeah, but unfortunately, a lot of government projects seem to expand until you cover every penny that you have, you know, sort of earmarked for.
Well, that's some of the concerns I think Mr. Ebner was talking about originally.
Yeah.
Let me ask this, and maybe it's too much of a leading question. Can we mortgage the future to future city councils to say in CPST 4 we would ask for more money? I don't think we can do that, can we?
It would be available to them, but they would have to vote on it, whoever the council is that's voted on
potentially
Project 4.
You know, that money wouldn't get to us till 2022 or 2023. And so it'd be a long time to have a loan outstanding.
The future city council may decide not to have a CPST core.
That's true.
That's
too.
My concern.
The voters.
The voters get a say. That's exactly right.
They get the
right.
Final say.
Well, I support this, and I think with our discussion tonight, we can definitely discuss the financing of the our. The not financing, but the cost control of this of these three jobs, or four if you say the Whiskey intersection, with whoever decides to do it, the city or the SCDOT.
Well, and the infrastructure bank has had local governments who have actually turned money back into it after a project was finished. So it can be done. You're absolutely right. And as I said at the outset of the presentation tonight, we've established goodwill with the State Infrastructure Bank. There was a time when, once the Palmetto Parkway went in, that was it. Aiken County got no more money. We were out of the loop. And I think we've had good support from local manufacturers, from the Chamber of Commerce, certainly from County Council, from North Augusta City Council, and our leaders. Mayor, you did a letter with Chairman Young. And by the time we went up before the infrastructure bank and had then-Senator Ryberg, Representative now-Senator Young, make a presentation to the board, we've established goodwill there. So if we go in and squander it through excessive spending on this initial project, they're not going to be interested in providing future grant money. So we certainly want to make sure that once the goodwill is established, we can certainly continue it.
All right. Well, that's, the money is always the concern, and it's so far in advance, you know, it could be a new council, new everybody by the time it goes through, and we don't want to squander that during our terms of service. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that was not a council goal that you adopted at Horizons by any means.
No.
Right. Mr. Mayor, just for clarification of records, I just wanted to make sure that the minutes state that there's no contractors or consultant services that have been selected for the expenditures of these funds. There's no procurement process at all ongoing. Is that safe to say, Richard?
As of right now?
As of right now.
Well, I mean, we've had some initial work with some licensed professionals. You know, URS is developing the...
But not with these funds.
With these funds, we would probably have some expenses, yes, as far as the work we're going to do on the Hitchcock Parkway widening. We have begun work on the Doherty Road turn lanes, a design for that. We started just initially with an initial concept plan on the University Parkway as well. So these funds would be used for that.
But if I may, I think Leslie's concerned about a potential conflict of interest. For voting, for purposes of voting on this,
no, we have no
particular thing.
Okay. I mean, that's what I want to clear.
There's no bill from an entity you're involved with at this time against these funds. Yes,
okay.
I'm sorry,
right.
I didn't understand your question.
Okay,
right.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Show of hands, please, for approval. Okay, passes unanimously. Okay. City attorney role and responsibilities.
Mr. Smith is going to take that.
I get to speak to this one, if I may. Mr. Pierce contacted me last week and advised that there was a request from council regarding my authority as city attorney, and I think specifically there was concern about my authority to issue legal opinions as they may relate to city responsibilities and city council responsibilities. I've handed you a memo that was included in your agenda package this evening, and I won't read the whole memo, but on the first page of the memo, I summarized a couple of what I believe are the pertinent city codes that deal with my responsibilities as your city attorney. Section 2-68 of the city code says one of my responsibilities is to give opinions upon questions of procedure, form, and law to any member of the council. And then section 2-285 talks about my duties as city attorney. Subsection 1 says that I'm the chief legal advisor to the city council and all offices, departments, boards, commissions, and agencies of the city, and all officers and employees of the city in matters relating to their official powers and duties, and in that capacity may communicate directly with the council and those offices, departments, boards, commissions, agencies, officers, and employees. And then subsection 2 also says The city attorney shall advise the city council, its committees, the city manager, or any other city officer upon all legal questions arising in the conduct of city business. I read that section as being very broad, and I summarize it by saying, you know, my role as your city attorney is to make sure that the actions that you participate in are in accordance with state law. And that's what I try to do, and I don't know if there's any particular questions that I can address regarding that, but that's where I see I get my authority as your city attorney. Are there any specific questions?
Yeah, well, I raised the issue, and I think you probably get a copy of my email, and hopefully we're able to read that. This is my sixth year on the council, and the subject has never come up, the subject of the duties and responsibilities of the city attorney. I must say, in my first term, there weren't very many opinions issued, as I recall. I mean, I know we received some guidance when there was some conflict. Some members of council were on boards and commissions, and you provided expert advice on how we should conduct our duties as members of the council, and if we get into a bind in terms of how we should conduct our procedures here as a parliamentarian. But there's been two in particular rulings that I have made no secret of not liking. That doesn't mean anything other than the fact that I didn't like them. And it raised the issue in my mind as to what is the function of the city attorney. When you look at the document that you gave me, and let me just deviate slightly, the opinions that you've given us, you've got a caveat on the top that classify them as privileged and confidential attorney work product not subject to disclosure pursuant to the South Carolina Freedom of Information Act as exempted by 30-4-40. I'm not sure I know what that means, but I obviously put the essence of two of your most recent opinions in my email, and I hope I wasn't violating the law doing that.
City Council is my client.
Okay.
And all clients enjoy what we call the attorney-client work privilege, or the privilege of that attorney-client privilege.
Okay.
In other words, I'm not allowed to disclose what you tell me when I give you advice on things and that sort of thing.
But it doesn't work. I'm sorry.
Well, it does. I mean, you and council enjoys the privilege by maintaining the sanctity of that privilege. If you don't share the advice that I give to others, and I will say, you know, as we're having this discussion, it's something that you discuss in law school, okay? But as I'm representing a public body, it's difficult to keep all of my advice to you secret, okay? Because some of the things I tell you are going to get out to the public, and they have to get out to the public because you're doing the public's business, okay? Mm-hmm. And so that is, in the perfect world, everything I told you would be kept secret, but when we represent public bodies, that's not always the case for obvious reasons.
So written opinions that you give us, we can disseminate. You probably would prefer we not do it in this form.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Because even this meeting tonight, the public, the only item on the agenda with no backup provided to the public was city attorney roles and responsibilities.
Right.
And hence the...
That was my understanding of what the question was and what Richard was asking me to... clarify was where do I get the authority to issue opinions and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And you know, just to clarify, I think part of the point you were making, you know, I don't sit around in my office thinking of opinions to send out.
Mm-hmm.
Typically what happens, either a council member calls me on the telephone, or a member of the city staff might call me on the telephone, or the city manager might call me on the telephone, and a question comes up. And so, you know, when that question comes up, if it's something that I feel is important to address with the council, I'll do that by way of that memorandum.
Well, the issue resulting from my visiting of public safety was particularly disturbing to me because I had gone over and made three visits, and all of a sudden the next thing I know is I get an email from the city attorney that says, you can't do that, no discussion, no phone call, nothing, and I just quite frankly didn't think that was a proper process, so I'll just let that go. The document that you gave us under duties and responsibilities, paragraph 2-285, uses the words advisor as providing advice to city council.
Right.
And that raises a question of how obligated are we to accept that advice?
Not at all.
If we receive advice that as a body is disturbing or not disturbing in any event, are we able to vote on accepting that legal advice? How does the council deal? For example, none of us really, I don't think, agree with your ruling on the agenda issue where the public can't come in and speak on a subject that's not on the agenda, even though we all know we can't do anything except listen. But how would we then say, or is there a way for us to say to the city attorney, yes, we understand how you feel about it, but we're going to let the public come in and talk to us without a week's notice and so forth?
I think what you need is an engineer's point of view of the law. I mean, the attorney gives us advice, and it's the best advice that he knows based on precedent, sure, recent rulings, and so forth. Yeah. When he tells us, you know, we shouldn't have the citizens come in without being on the agenda and so forth, we do it at our, you know, if you want to ignore his advice, you can do it at your own peril.
Well, that's
peril.
A question I'm asking, Steve. I'm asking.
Basically that you're, you know, you're doing it at your own peril. And, you can't line up the council and have the council agree to have, a free-flowing agenda. I mean, are you saying we should have a vote where we have an agenda that's free-flowing, where we can entertain ideas that are not listed?
No, I honestly feel that any citizen, and I think members of the council feel, that a citizen ought to be able to walk into our meeting tonight and come up and make a complaint or make a comment about city operations. And up until that ruling, we were able to do that. Now, you might feel that they should have to strictly comply with the city attorney's opinion. I'm just asking the question, are we required to accept the opinion? Should we discuss accepting the opinion? Should we vote on accepting the opinion? Or as we've done in the past, simply recognize that it is the legal opinion of our advisor, and we accept it and we move on? I'm just raising the question.
That's not what I want.
That's what I was asking.
If we had an agenda item, which citizen comment, but no action would be taken on it, and then if an issue arises out of a citizen's comment, then it gets published in the agenda subsequent time, so the general public,
which is what Aiken County
what's
does,
going on. Yeah.
Yeah, which is what Aiken County does, Greenville, and a lot of other municipalities,
yes. Yes.
But which we don't. So
well,
but I,
like I said, we
yeah.
can ignore it. We can ignore them. We can do that at our own peril.
If I can just address that particular question, and you know, as I understood, the purpose of this agenda item was simply to talk about where I get my authority to issue my opinions. I learned long ago that you don't tell elected officials, you know, what I say is what goes. And ultimately, council does have the ability to vote on any issue that council wants to vote on. I can recommend, based on what my years of experience would recommend to you, what my understanding of the law says, and that sort of thing. And ultimately, it's just a recommendation or it's my legal advice. Council has the ability to vote contrary to what I advise, and council does so at their peril. I could be right, I could be wrong. In that particular case, the Court of Appeals made it very clear that they were taking a very limited view or very liberal reading of the state statute to prohibit additional conversation outside of the agenda. And the Court of Appeals made it very clear that that's what they were doing. It is on track to be heard by the Supreme Court. It does take anywhere from a year to 2 years to work its way through that process, and I still see it on the list of cases to be heard by the Supreme Court at some point in the future, but it's quite a ways down the roster.
So if we were then...
It would be a matter of council voting to discuss their agenda if they wanted to pass rules in the city code about how the agenda works. But I do think it's important to remember that citizens aren't prohibited from talking.
Oh, they're not.
There's a procedure set in place to enable them to talk.
Mm-hmm.
That does provide the city with an opportunity to make sure that when you have that city council meeting where the citizens do talk, that people are here who can address the issues that they may bring up and that sort of thing in an intelligent way.
If we wanted to visit and vote on that as a body, that would be a memo to the city manager to put this item on a future agenda.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And frankly, that's true of anything council does.
Sure.
The council wants to do something a particular way. You know, there's a way to do it. It may be by resolution or by ordinance, and I'm happy to provide council with the advice they need on how to make that happen.
Just for a point of understanding, what would be the worst-case scenario if we did that, and we all would like to do that, but if we did that with the court case as it is now, before appeal?
The thing that scares me more than anything else, and it's the reason I give very conservative advice about the Freedom of Information Act, is it does carry criminal penalties. Criminal penalties mean you go to jail. And if I'm wrong, or if I'm right and you're wrong and you decide to go contrary to my advice, somebody can put you in jail for violating state law. And that's why I would rather give you very conservative advice that keeps you out of jail than give you the advice you want to hear that lands you in jail.
Right.
Well, I recognize your advice has been very conservative. No question about that. As I said, obviously, in my opinion, in a couple of cases, too conservative. Yeah. With regard to the sending this issue to the Attorney General for an opinion,
yes, sir.
Is that something that counsel should have approved, or is that within your sphere of responsibilities to do so?
I interpret the language in Section 2-285. Paragraph 1 gives me the authority as the chief legal advisor to city council in matters relating to their official powers and duties, and I honestly believe that memo directly fell under that paragraph. Also, for me to advise the city council upon all legal questions arising in the conduct of city business. I was aware that you were not happy with the opinion that I issued in that memorandum. And I didn't want you and I to be crosswise with each other and just sit there going, well, that's what I said, and you say, well, that I disagree. And the only way I know to arbitrate that issue is to get the Attorney General involved, who can issue a formal opinion that's searchable. I did search the Attorney General's opinions. I did not find any.
Neither did I.
I didn't find where they had previously ruled on this issue. I was, frankly, a little surprised.
Well, it was interesting because the day before, I called the city at the Attorney General's office and identified myself as a member of Aiken City Council and asked a question about getting an Attorney General opinion on a matter of our council operations. And the attorney I spoke to said, well, that's fine, but you've got to get approval of council. And the next day I get your email that said I've already sent it off. So you can imagine my concern. Obviously, there was...
And he may reject my letter. I went back through my computer. I think I have probably asked for about 3 opinions from the Attorney General. I haven't asked for one in a long time. And there is really no formal procedure on their website to tell you how to do it.
Because there are issues related with that I think bear significantly on us carrying out our responsibilities. For example, that memo makes it clear that any official dealings we have with the city go through the city manager. And of that, there is no doubt. Now, once a year, we're supposed to evaluate the city manager. How do we do that? Based strictly on what the city manager tells us? Because obviously, the memo says you can't go visit public safety at their shift change, even to thank them for the job well done, or visit people on site without... I'm not sure that the city manager has given us specific guidance. I don't think any of us have asked for it, but whether or not that is with him or with his blessing, certainly it would be one or the other.
The only way I know how to answer that question is to suggest that we wait until we get the opinion back from the Attorney General and see what it says.
Any idea when?
I have no idea.
No idea.
I honestly don't. I don't think it's not like you're asking the Supreme Court for an opinion.
Right.
It won't be years.
Okay.
I would be surprised if it's months.
Right, right.
Mr. Mayor.
It's supposed to be 30 days. The opinions I've asked for on some other issues in the neighborhood, and I've and any elected official obviously can ask for opinions from it. And I've gone through our now Senator Young, and they kind of have a rule of thumb of 30 days to do the simple opinion. Now, if it's a court case, it could be forever, but typically it's 30 days on the simple stuff.
Before we hear from her, let me just close with this comment. I would just simply say that that if there's an opinion that involves a member of council, we ought to have the courtesy of being involved before it's sent off to the state, or probably even before it's issued. I mean, quite frankly, I should have been, we could have had a closed-door session with my conduct, which was obviously considered as a violation of law. Now, I don't know who asked for this opinion. I certainly didn't. But it would have been a courtesy, I think, for me to get involved with that.
Erie asked for it. He did that under the city, though. He's the one that asked for the opinion.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, Jane Page Thompson, 240 Knox Avenue. Thank you for allowing us to have public comment on any item on the agenda. This is one of them, so I have a comment. The concern when I read both Councilman Ebner and Councilman DeWar's emails about what you all were going to discuss tonight really rose in my heart, because freedom of information and the dialogue that our elected officials have on our behalf with the departments over which they determine a budget, over which they determine policy, over which you all govern, are integral to your ability to determine whether or not the operations and functions of the city are going the way the voters have voted you to guide them. And while the opinion of Attorney Smith is probably a very conservative, if not uber rigid one, I believe that the state law 5.13.30, where it talks about the duties of municipal elected officials, probably is the most important. You employ the city manager. You adopt and review the budget. You have the power to inquire into the conduct of any office, department, or agency of the municipality. You have the right to form an investigation as to the municipal affairs and give the public information concerning them. You can provide for the independent annual audit of the books. You can provide for general health and welfare of the municipality in accordance to the state statutes. And there are a lot of other things. You're also charged by state law 513-100 to evaluate, create, change, establish, abolish any department, agency, or office under your purview. So if the state law gives you the right to do your job as elected officials, which is to determine whether or not the money that the taxpayers entrust with you is being spent wisely, whether or not the departments that serve the public good, sewer, water, finance, whatever they may be, are functioning to the level that you expect them to do, that's your right. That's your duty. That's mandated by state law. And I don't believe that any city code can supersede what the state law defines as your duties. Now, I encourage you to not accept the opinion of the city attorney when it comes to doing your duty, fulfilling your obligation to meet with housing and urban development, to meet with public safety, to go into the departments that are under your purview, to make sure at the end of the year that the check and balance that is innate in our Constitution, both at the federal level and the state level, is there. And that check and balance is vital and important, especially, as the state law cautions, when a council chooses the manager council form of government in the state of South Carolina. So I encourage you to remember that you serve the people, you serve the taxpayers, and you serve what's best for the city of Aiken. And if that means you have to go down to public safety for a shift change to give those officers encouragement, especially after what's happened to us in the last year and a half, then I applaud you for doing that. If that means you're going to go visit the wonderful, wonderful guys at Sewer and Water, when there's a water main break on a Sunday morning, to encourage them, thank them for their overtime. That is your job. And I don't think any opinion from the city attorney should stop you from doing your job as the elected officials who we've elected to serve us. And I really believe that you can adopt the provision that the county council has, which on their agenda, they place agenda item at the bottom of their agenda, which is any public concerns that the public wishes to bring forward for consideration at future council meetings. So I encourage you to do those two things. I encourage you to add public comment at the end of your meeting, and I encourage you to keep doing the job that we elected you to do, which is encourage our city employees to monitor problems, to budget and to plan effectively, and to not let a city attorney opinion that may be too conservative keep you from representing the people that elected you, especially since, given the Voting Rights Act, we have now reduced representation on council. Because of the Voting Rights Act, we've gone to 421. I lost representation. And now I'm being told by the city attorney that even my council member can't go check on a department that I've had a problem with. Well, I'm sorry, but that's not what a representative republic is all about. So thank you.
Jane Page, if I may, what I hear from you is that you definitely want council to fulfill their statutory duty, as the state has said.
Absolutely.
So to the extent that the state law would provide that under a council manager form of government, that council members are not to direct city employees, but they are instead to work through the city manager, you would want them to follow that provision as well. If I may, and then the other point is, to the extent that the city attorney is seeking an attorney general opinion, while you have your heartfelt beliefs here that you share with council tonight, certainly there is some credence in seeing what the attorney general has to say for the state of South Carolina.
Absolutely, but you do know that the attorney general is only given the bureaucratic response to that side. So he is upholding what the state departments want and procedurally adhere to. But I think what smacked at me was the reference to CEO of the city. Actually, the city manager acts as the COO. He's employed by the CEO, who is the mayor, and the board of trustees, who is council, to do a job. Now, yes, I understand that council cannot direct the actions and the performance of duties of employees.
Well, again,
but
that's what we're having the attorney general.
Going down to public
general,
safety.
Well, that's what we're having
for a shift change observance. Excuse me, I gave you time. You give me is not necessarily. I mean, Richard, that is not directing the city department. That is going down there to monitor what they're doing.
The only point, Jane Page, is we do have the attorney general looking at that, and he's looking at state law. He is the elected official as the legal representative for the state. So I'm not sure I share your opinion that he's just going to give a bureaucratic answer. They're going to interpret state law. They have a whole staff that does that research. And again, if you don't agree with Gary's opinion, to me, the state attorney general has no dog in the fight, if you will, and certainly would provide an impartial opinion, and that's what we want to look at. And you know, how we nuance, how we describe who I am, who council is, who the citizens are, you know, as far as the operation since I became city manager, the size of the agenda packets have grown tremendously because there's a lot more information in the agenda packet for every meeting. I've tried to share just immense amounts of information. We have a Horizons retreat every year. We have issues that come before council, and staff members come up and speak to those issues. So we've provided a great deal of transparency. In fact, the city of Aiken's been recognized by the Comptroller General as being one of the most transparent cities in the state. So, you know, again, we're not going to change that. We're going to keep going forward. And what we want to do is make sure we do what is the right thing and what is the legal thing.
Well, and I also hope you understand we have a whole appellate court to appeal attorney general opinion if they smack at the individual constitutional rights being.
We're just trying to get an independent opinion.
Well, one of the things is I think you both kind of mixed apples and oranges. Both of you referred to having possibly an agenda item for citizen comment.
But you're mixing that in with FOIA, which is
FOIA,
but the management of where the council has to work through the city manager. So that's two different issues, and you know, you both blended that issue, and a lot of people, I'm sure, lost you. I was trying to follow it, but you know, you argued one way, Jane Page, and then you threw in, you know, the argument for the putting it on the agenda, which really has nothing to do with the setup of how the city is run through the city manager.
Right. I was asking the opinions given by Mr. Smith to you all, one of which is that city council meetings are not allowed to have discussed an item brought to you by the public unless it has been prior noticed to council through Richard Pierce a week ahead of time. The way county council gets around that week in advance, because sometimes, let's face it, citizens may have an issue that comes up and it's the day of a council meeting and they need to come and tell you that. And the provision that they have in the county council agenda is they put an agenda item at the end of the agenda that the citizens have the right to come bring them in something that's not going to get voted on, but you have the right to bring it up. And the other opinion that Mr. Smith issued was that you all don't have the right, without it being a public meeting, to go observe and monitor the departments within the city. And the state law is clear. You have every right to do that. You can't tell them what to do. You can't give them orders. You can't give them directive.
Well, no,
but you can monitor them and you can be there.
But if I wanted to monitor it, I would tell Richard, I'm going down to public safety. I'm going to monitor their operations for 2 days. I'm not going to basically, I'm going to collect information, but not give any direction or whatever. I mean, or go to public works or whatever.
You know. And you have the right to do that, and you don't have to let the city manager know as a city council member.
Well, the city attorney agrees with that, Jane Page, and that's why we're getting the attorney general opinion. So we're going to get that clarified.
Thank
we want
you.
To do what's right. And on the agenda right now is a petitions and requests section. So when folks come forward with a petition or request, it's going to go on the agenda. That's the only reason for the week in advance. We just have the physical act of trying to put together the information and get it out before the public so everybody knows what the person's going to come in and talk about, just like everybody should know from the agenda packet what we're going to talk about at our council meetings. It's just treating everybody the same way.
That's great. Thank you.
I was going to point out, actually, under the city's way of doing this, city council could have a complaint put on the agenda by a citizen, and city council could actually vote on it at the very next city council meeting, which is actually quicker than how county council does it. If you complied with the agenda rules, it could be heard and voted on by city council quicker than county council does it. I like our procedure better. We know what we're talking about.
Let me make one final comment. I want to make it very clear that I don't think any member of council every member of council understands that we have no authority whatsoever to direct the actions of staff. And had there been coordination with the Attorney General opinion that went to Attorney General Wilson, I would have tried to point that out. The initial statement was simply that I went there. It didn't accuse me of directing staff, it just said I went there. And I think There's a question as to regarding oversight versus direction. I don't know of any of us that have directed. Now, that's not to say that I haven't had a conversation with a member of staff and asked a question, and all of a sudden the chief coming in tonight, somebody had asked me earlier about do you need to get a license for a slingshot? And I just asked him the question. So there's no question we're not going to direct the action of the staff. It's just part of the oversight responsibility. So with that, I'll, so to speak, yield the floor.
I just want to make sure that, Jane Page, that I understand what you want for us to possibly consider reinstituting, and that is public comment. For example, if I have problems with my garbage collection, I can come before 1 minute and say, I've made this request 10 times. I haven't had any results. City, can you look into that?
Yeah, the county council does it. They have a part of their agenda.
But no action at all.
No, you don't do any action. It is bringing dialogue to you that you may not otherwise know about. And to ask the citizens to be able to see into the future, to know what their concerns are going to be. I think is a little, I think that's a little unrealistic to ask of the citizens. I mean, what if you had a road?
So, Richard, are you saying the petitions and requests, right, we have that already? Is that?
You have it already. That's under the petitions and requests. That's a constitutional right as
so
the city
attorney. So he's saying that we have that already under petitions and requests.
But you're saying that anything that goes under petitions and requests needs to be a week in advance so that everybody has notice.
Everybody has the same notice about the same things of what's going to be on the agenda. Now, again, the county setup is completely different than how the city of Aiken is organized under state law. The reason you have a city manager is, and we get a lot of them, I mean, we get, you know, many, many calls for constituent service that we just handle. Now, whether that needs to come to council, I could just tell you that folks have expressed, you know, happiness and haven't resolved. Now, that's not going to be 100%. Mm-hmm. And I think we've had citizens that have freely come in here and shared their opinions on different city operations and their experience with it. But, you know, that we have business to transpire at the council meeting. If it's something that we can help them with the city manager's office, we like to have that opportunity to try and help folks. That typically takes care of it. And if it's something that needs to go further, the citizens have been very clear to send their letter in, and council's been very willing to hear from them at a council meeting. There's nothing different in that. There's no need to add anything. You're already doing it, Frank.
I do think, though, that we, as people who elect you, need to have the least barriers to access to our representatives as possible. And I think that that's something that you need to keep in mind in the future.
And I think through the website, the constituents have contacted their council members. I've had every single member of council contact me with a constituent concern. And not a single time in the 2 years as city manager, not a single time as 2 years as assistant city manager, and not the prior 10 years as the city solicitor and staff attorney, did I ever have anyone say they had a hard time reaching a council member. Council has made themselves available. I mean, Aiken is really a model city in the service that we provide. There are so many times that we get the comment about where I lived before, I was never treated this way, and I'm so happy to be here. And I think we have to keep all of that in mind.
Yeah, I think that we've had a great process in the past, and some of these opinions have changed how that process works. And I'm just expressing a concern that we don't lose ground since we've made up so much ground.
Well,
thank you.
And certainly, the city manager's office is open 8:10 to 5, 5 days a week. More than happy to try and help citizens with any need or concerns they have. That has not changed either.
I'd just like to ask one question. Has any of council members had any citizen come to them with a concern that could not be at least given to the city manager and probably 90% of the time resolved, maybe 80, that this process that we're in has been bad for them, that they weren't able to get what they wanted? I have never had any citizen come to me and say, golly, you know, we can't get, I mean, since this started, we can't get a problem solved because we can't come to council, you know, unless we get on the agenda. That hadn't happened at all. It's my belief, not only belief, but experience, that over the years that our citizens are not hesitant to talk to our council members and the mayor. And we quickly jump on these items and, for the most part, can get them resolved. If not, certainly they're on the next agenda because the council member puts it on the agenda. But let's just remember that this is still being resolved. You know, it's going to the Supreme Court, so...
Attorney General,
yes. Excuse me.
Yes.
And we'll see how it comes out. But it's not exactly correct to say that the citizens, and it hadn't been said this way, but don't have a path to city council, because they have the same path they've always had except the agenda aspect of it. And they can still get on that. All they have to do is let the city manager know on a Monday before the agenda goes out for the next meeting. And maybe we can get it back to the way it was. But even if we don't, I don't think it's that detrimental to our citizens, from my perspective.
Well, Mr. Mayor, is there any restriction on the you know, the citizens going directly to the department with which they would like to see some action.
The departments take citizen calls all the time, Mr. Hillman. They really do.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of people come, you know, to their council members, but then there's nothing to prevent them, you know, from actually going directly to the department to get satisfaction. I mean, you know, even a minor...
That routinely happens. Yeah. Oh, yes, sir. It routinely
happens. I don't see any problems with that.
One of my favorite things to do is report potholes. If I see a pothole, I call down there and go by in about 30 minutes, and it's patched.
As a citizen, not as a mayor, right?
Not always. But I think we ought to. I think that you can do those little things quickly and easy, and you're not directing anybody. You're informing them, as I see it. Hey, there's a pothole, you know, on wherever it may be, and...
I do have some comments.
I think Debbie Nix has had her name, her hand up.
Go ahead first. No hurry.
Debbie Nix.
Okay, Debbie.
Hey, y'all. I am Debbie Nix. I live at 808 Woodward Street. And I have a question, which is really just a yes or no, because I want to be clear. On the decisions or the renderings from the city attorney that's written to council, is that or is that not freedom of information? Can we request that?
I believe that the advice that I give to counsel is subject to the attorney-client privilege. And the Freedom of Information Act actually makes an exemption for legal advice that I give to city council.
Okay. Thank you.
But the council member it was addressed to can release it if he wishes, right?
I think I answered the question.
Well, I have a question.
The advice I give to city council is privileged.
Yes.
And legal advice is privileged just as in any other situation. And the privilege should be maintained not only by me, but by the members of city council.
But we've just talked about what you've given.
We have.
So
we
it's
have.
Open.
And I've freely admitted that sometimes it gets out.
Mm-hmm. Like tonight.
But I mean, I have to like it.
Yeah, okay.
But it has to be, there's no, just because I issue an opinion, it doesn't go in a book of reported opinions like the Attorney General's opinions do. My advice to counsel is supposed to be private.
But I think there's some issues that come up that you issue opinion on that make a difference in which way the council votes on something or takes action.
I issue opinions in public sessions and in private sessions.
Does this go to?
But obviously, it's hard to claim privilege if you're issuing advice at a public session. When you're issuing advice in a private session.
But if you send us an email and say everything you want on a particular public item that one of us ask about, mm-hmm. And it's like Mr. DeWar said, it's on the top of that. But that was asked specifically, you know, for some mm-hmm. citizen to ask about this question. So we need to tell that citizen mm-hmm. that opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ms. Nix, I think, had some other questions.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off,
Ms.
Gabby.
That's okay. I love the mayor because you have always allowed the people to speak, and I will always appreciate that about you, Mayor, even though we've had our differences. I'm endeared to you because of that. What if, when I put my ear to the ground and make some phone calls, when we're told that your rendering is not public information, this is what I hear. What if the councilman goes to the police department, wants to find some information out, chief police doesn't like it, calls city manager tells attorney, render a decision. That's immediately what goes through our heads, because really and truly what's happening right now, I've been in the county council, and I'm telling you, that's Mars compared to this, and school board is even worse. But the grit for the people is Richard's not elected. And there's Richard makes the agendas. Richard tells you guys what the deal is. I don't know that he tells you how to vote. I don't think he can do that. But what the deal is in the whole nine yards. And he's paid to do that. And that is a form of governing that we've chosen here, and I recognize that. But the citizens, I'm just trying to give you what the citizens are going to think. That you might want to try and answer that one, because FOIA right now is huge. We don't have it in South Carolina. You know, we're the seventh most corrupt state in the United States. So, Mayor, this is your legacy, really and truly, of the openness that you've given, even when you didn't necessarily want to. You've always done that, and I've watched you and I videoed you do that. So, this is a real concern for me, and the feel of it is wrong. The spirit of it is wrong. It's controlling and contracting. It's not free. And I think that's how the people are going to feel when this is known. So just wanted to give you a heads up. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
And again, Mrs. Nix, I've met with several different citizens who wanted items on the agenda. I don't control the agenda. I'm responsible for getting notice to council what we're going to be talking about at a particular meeting. We meet with council in an annual retreat and talk about objectives and goals. Council votes on that. I think I've said from the very start as city manager, when council's making a decision, I want to make sure they're making an informed decision. And I don't tell council how to vote. No city manager should do that. That's not the role of a city manager. But I am responsible for making sure that council has as much information as possible. And again, I think you've noticed how much bigger the agendas have gotten with all the information
yes,
we share with
300
council.
Pages. Could I make one suggestion about that? Because when I was talking to, I have kind of a sounding board of different people that I call and say, how does this bounce off of you? They said, how are we supposed to know what's on the agenda? We don't get one of those emails. We don't see it in the newspaper. So how do we know what the agenda is?
It's on the website. We post that typically the Thursday before the Monday meeting, and we've had that discussion before, you and I have. We always post the agenda, and the packet is there. The second page of the posting at the website shows all the agenda items, and then there's information items we provide as well, too, as far as departmental operations go. And
that's
anybody
great, but
can
not
look
for Mr. Public, just Mr. Joe Public. And I'm so thankful that you send me yours and that Dick sends me his condensed version. It's very helpful. But the average public, they don't know that, unless it's out there somewhere for them to see other than a website.
Amy, doesn't the paper have it?
Yeah, the paper publishes it.
Where is it?
Amy typically writes it up.
Well, not all of the items.
The paper doesn't publish the entire agenda.
Reading items are published, though.
Now, wait a minute. Let's let her talk a minute. Amy, what does...
It's just the actual agenda, not the packet.
Right.
But you list the items. You list the items, do you not?
Yes.
Is this what you do? Okay, well, yeah. I apologize because I was told that. I don't read the paper, but okay.
Hang loose.
It's on their website, too. It's on their website. It's on our website.
Is the website this form as well?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the package.
The package is there, but that's
on the
at
website.
The top of it.
Okay.
Right.
Good.
Let me clarify something. The issue that took most of our meeting tonight, the city attorney role and responsibilities, was not in the paper as being on the agenda. It's on a petition and request, but it wasn't in the paper that I recall reading.
Well, but it was on the website. I mean, we did publish.
It probably was on the website.
Yes, sir. It was.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie.
I have a couple of clarifications, and I mention this all the time when I'm asking some questions that are probably oddball or different than others ask because of my corporate background. We had a lot more yes and no answers when you're dealing with an operating plant or you're working out of Savannah River. Things tend to work a little different. One of the things that... I struggle with, and I'll use the capital project sales tax. We went along battling back and forth who had authority to do these. I mean, authority over the operation of them as well as the financing and how they should be done. And that took me a while to get down to the point, and whether Mr. Smith was wrong in his interpretation or what really doesn't make any difference. But some of these, and I use that one, I had a different opinion than the city attorney did, and also the auditor has had the same opinion I did. There's a couple of others that come up, and most of the time, something that the city attorney rules on during the meeting is really immaterial to me. It sounds all right. But we got into, and I'll use another one, the Jim Lakes petition, and I wanted that to be a resolution on the, you know, agenda. And it took a while for that opinion to get clarified. And sometimes I'm wondering if it's better if there's a discussion or a disagreement on how we should operate, if we should continue an item on the agenda to have Gary time to go look it up. Obviously, during the meeting, he can't say, let me get out my law books and look something up. And I think there's times that we need to do that. Sure. So that, and it's only been about three things in my 3 years that really made a difference to me. The other thing, and going back to Mr. DeWar's issue with going over to the area, and in my, if you will, civilian background versus government, one of the first things that you would do if somebody is violating a rule is you would call them up and say, hey, guy, you're ruling, you're doing wrong, and I'm going to write you up next time. And I think that's something we need to do. If you see us do something wrong, well, give us a call, because most of the time we're going to be ignorant of that, you know, that we aren't doing it right. I think we're all more sensitive to it today than we were before. So I think that's something we need to think about. And then I need to ask a question on the future Jim Lakes. We're going to be having a consultant hired by the city, and I'm going to need to talk to that person in front of somebody, or maybe not in front of city employees, but I want to find out exactly what he's doing. And if I don't know some of the answers, I'll get a geologist or somebody and come in there and see, how do I get to look at the data? Because right now I'm not getting any data. And I may not be smart enough to read all the data, but there's going to be data coming out that's going to be critical to say whether the road's built right or not. And I want to be able to have access to that data. I don't necessarily need copies of it, but I want to be able to read it and ask questions of that particular person. And if the city can't be present, I need to ask permission to talk to him offline with just the city attorney and the city manager versus a city employee?
Well, we've always made the city documents available to you, Mr. Ebner. You've made numerous trips to my office and city office.
I know,
offices.
But in this particular case, I would like to talk to that contractor directly, whoever we use.
Well, okay. Let us get the report from the developers and then find out what the scope of work is going to be for the consultant. I'm not going to be able to answer that here tonight.
I want to know.
Again, we know that's a concern of yours. We'll set that up. You know, on the capital sales tax projects, too, since you've put this on the record, I want the record to be clear, too. I've always, in my discussions with you, said that council reserved the right to determine the order of the projects. That was on the ballot. So, you know, again, whatever differences you might have had with the city attorney, with the city manager, you know, has I've met with you and discussed it with you several times and was clear about council's role.
It just took a while to get that answer, is all.
Well, sometimes they do take a while. Whether we'd like to move quickly or not,
I always thought my answer was it had to be in conformance with the ballot.
Yeah.
And the ballot gave city council the right to change the order.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's been the consistent
and to monitor,
message.
According to the auditor, the city council was supposed to monitor the projects.
Well, you do that. That's right. Through the budget
process,
you do that.
But in the past, we didn't.
Well, we did.
Did we give the city manager?
You had an annual audit in the past that talked about the capital project sales tax.
There's nothing in the records that show we authorized the previous city manager to overrun project. There's nothing in the record of that.
Yeah. And again, we're getting way far afield of what we started talking about.
Well, no, we're talking
about. But I'm just trying to reiterate for the record that I'm more than willing to hear council's concerns. If you have information you need, I have spent hours and hours and weekends and nights getting that information to council, and I don't particularly plan on changing that. I've spent a lot of work on that, and we won't stop doing
that. I asked a specific question about Jim Lakes, and I need to talk to the real people that put the data together. And that's what my request is. And when we get to that point, after we see it, then I'll put it in writing.
Mr. Mayor, I think that Amy had a question for clarification.
I don't know if it's professional for me to speak at a city council meeting, but I just pulled up our PDF page, and the petition and request was included on our in the agenda. I'm looking at it.
I just looked at it and didn't see it, so we're looking at this. Okay. I'll get with you afterwards.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah, go.
Okay, are we any other discussion here? If not, we adjourn.
No, wait,
I'm sorry. Items.
I was going to mention that leadership right. Aiken County will be in this room tomorrow at 8:10.
Okay.
And the council is invited, and starting at 8:30, they do have a presentation by local officials, so the class would want to hear from council. If you get here before 8:30, the rumor is they're going to have some coffee and donuts for you. I also have a letter to you from Miriam Hare. The town of Blackville won in the public service category for their volunteerism. That was their submission. And Council Member DeWard asked for the turnover rate in our human resources report for the first 6 months of 2012. We provided that to you. You'll see that in our full-time employees, the turnover rate was 10.77%. And the Society for Human Resources Management, Alicia Davis is a member of that organization, says typically the turnover rate is about 10%. And as I said, we do have a letter from DOT coming to you on from Ron Patton regarding the letter that I had sent and copied you in on the Hitchcock Parkway widening. And then at the Fresh Market, if you drive down Whiskey Road tonight, you'll see that there are some barrels up and some cones. Public Safety has put those in place just to see if we can direct traffic to the light once Fresh Market opens next week. And just we'll measure that to see whether there needs to be something done permanently. And I think the Aiken Estates Neighborhood Association was particularly interested
yes,
in that, as well as members of council. So we are gathering data on that at this point.
Dick, any reason why you asked for 6 months versus the entire year?
Because we got the last 6 months
earlier.
Right. Earlier.
Okay.
It was in the council package.
You've got the information now for all of this budget year. But we went back so you'd have a full calendar year as well.
That might be available on email if you...
I can look that up. The second question deals with...
Because it was in the agenda packet. We gave it to you.
Right. The determinations. Are we in litigation with and the terminated employees that we...
No.
None?
No.
Okay.
I have a few questions. I became aware yesterday that the Planning Commission is having a work session tomorrow at 4 o'clock, and they're going to take public testimony apparently relating to the definition of kitchen and the length of a building.
Mm-hmm.
We had discussed this in the past, and I'm somewhat confused. I've always felt that a work session was for the benefit of the members of the council or commission so that the staff could make them aware of certain issues that arise and so forth, and it's odd that we're going to have a work session and take public comment and then go out that very same day and before the public and repeat the whole process. I'm not sure why we're taking public input in a work session.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a question you had. Mr. DeWire can find out why they did it
well,
that
just,
way. Typically, Planning Commission kind of runs that operation, so I don't know.
But we've talked about it in the prior council, and that's why we started to record it and so forth. And
that's right.
I know some people were upset at the last work session when they weren't allowed to present any testimony. But
well, that
I
must,
think
my understanding was that's why they were having it's really it should be called a special meeting.
Well, if they call it a special meeting, I don't have a heartburn, but I have a heartburn with a work session because. The public is going down. If you want to go to Planning Commission meeting, get down at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. I think 5 o'clock is when it starts, and you're going to get to listen to everything. But tomorrow night, you're going to get down, and most of it will have already been discussed in a work session.
Well, I would hope, though, decisions have been made. Again, it should be an opportunity for public comment at the special meeting.
Yeah. The next thing is that the Arts Commission... I think I'm losing my member of the Arts Commission because she's so frustrated with the lack of attendance. I mean, I bring this up because I'd like all the council members maybe to take a look and find out if they're appointees have been attending the meetings.
Well, I've got an opening.
Yeah, I know you do. But she went. My representative went to one meeting, and she was the only one who showed up. And this is at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's 8 o'clock in the morning to accommodate the other people, because certainly it's an early time for a lot of us to get up and go to a meeting. So I don't even know how many members, Mr. Mayor, if we're following the policy of three misses and you're out, I don't know how many members there are.
Now, Mr. Dwyer, you and I have discussed about two or three times before,
and I
had shared with you, we did have a couple of members who had missed two meetings in a row. And we personally contacted them. Now, Glenn Parker is here. He can come to the microphone and speak, and hopefully he's going to stand up in a minute and start walking towards the microphone so he can come and speak. And he'll share with you again. We have this conversation with the members, and certainly, as he and I discussed, we never want our volunteers to be frustrated because, you know, there is important business for folks to do on these committees and commissions. Can you share with us where we are today, Glenn?
Sure. We did have a couple of members that missed two meetings in a row, sent them a registered letter, and have heard from both of them, actually have a meeting in the morning, and expect, other than one member who's had some recent surgery, she's not sure if she'll make it or not, I think we're going to be back and going in the morning.
Tomorrow replaces the one you couldn't have last week because we couldn't have a quorum. Yeah.
Right.
Correct. But we do have the one opening that we know of, and I was just writing these down back here, but I think everybody else is good to go now.
Right. So,
you missed two meetings in a row. How far back have you gone? Have you gone back the last 12 months?
Yeah.
And there's only two people that have missed two meetings in a row?
No. We've had two that have missed two in a row. So we contacted those two just to let them know of the policy that if three, you're out, and they plan on being there in the morning.
My question, how far back did you go to say that we only missed... That only two people have missed two in a row.
I don't think I've had anyone miss two in a row going back a good way. Some have missed individual meetings, but I don't think I've had anybody miss two in a row. I know we haven't had anybody miss three in a row.
Okay.
Well, I can tell you that my representative I spoke with personally, and she has two jobs.
Yeah.
And given the fact that she has two jobs to make ends meet, she assured me that she would try to work her schedule to make it to the meeting. Did you speak with Glenn?
I have. Okay. I've spoken to her a couple times. Okay.
And again, Mr. Dwyer, I want you to understand, you've raised your concerns. We had the conversation, several emails about it, and we've been working on it. It is a very legitimate concern, and it's, you know, we're going to have the volunteer luncheon next month, and we tell our volunteers how we couldn't conduct city business without them, and that's absolutely the case.
I raised a concern with fellow council members, and just ask them to look at the attendance because we get all the minutes and so forth.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. I have two items regarding public safety. I see the chief is not here. Okay. Well, let me... You'd sent a... at my request, you'd sent a police report that I read based on something that happened on Whiskey March 1st, and I guess I'll just ask you for more details in an email.
Okay, sir.
There's a comment here on public safety staffing, and I got to tell you, I am thoroughly confused. On the one hand, I've got a document some here that says once we hire somebody, it takes 48 weeks to train them, and the update here that came out is that four officers are on solo patrol, and I don't know how that could be because we had so many vacancies. We graduated four from the police academy, but police academy I think is 6 or 7 weeks, and that's still a long time. I don't know what to ask for. I mean, at one point we were down 24 officers, and there's only 82 that we have. And I know that I'm not critical of the city. I'm not critical of public safety. I think they're doing a wonderful job. I just want to make sure that they have all that they should have, and that includes people. But it seems like I'm not critical of what the staff is doing to replace the 24. I'm just upset that we ended up with 24, and I don't know whether that's a valid reason to be upset or not. I would just hope that we're not going to relax our training standards at all, that we're going to stick with that 48 weeks if that's what we determine we need to be, and recognize all of us that we're going to have a significant shortage in public safety for a decent period of time.
Well, I mean, the best answer to that, we've been over this, I know, at least a half a dozen times, and the chief was very clear at Horizons, we're not relaxing any standards at all. We do experience some delay. They have to go through the fire academy and the police academy in order to become qualified under the accreditation standards that we operate under. And again, public safety is one of three in the state that's an agency of excellence from the accreditation authority. We do have the proper training in place. We don't have 24 vacancies. We had 8. We closed out the applications for the 8 vacancies March 4th. We had 106 applications for those 8 vacancies. Talked to over 25 people. We have veterans. We have folks that work for public safety in past years that now want to come back. Literally, depending on who's hired, we may not have those delays if they're already certified, have the certifications in place, and are ready to go. So I have met with the Director of Public Safety numerous times over council's concerns, and we believe we have a mechanism in place to not only fill the vacancies, but to keep the high caliber of officer on the road. We appreciate the concern. We're working through the vacancies we have experienced, and again, we knew a good number of those vacancies were going to happen because of retirements, and discussed that at Horizons and in this room before the retirements actually took effect. So we knew that was coming, and I think public safety's done an excellent job of preparing for the vacancies, filling the vacancies, and making sure that we have the quality of public safety service that the citizens have come to appreciate.
Well, I would just make the comment that you and I have a different definition of a vacancy, and I understand that. I define a vacancy as not having a fully trained officer, officer to meet responsibilities. And I'm not sure that 8 is the right number of vacancies if you define it my way.
Your city manager.
Yes,
you are. Open positions we had were 8, and we had 106 applications for that. 25 well-qualified individuals that we've talked with, and we've conducted interviews last week, and we're quite encouraged. And we appreciate the concern. We want to run a good operation. And again, you've got the human resources report. Turnover in local government is a fact of life, and we do the best we can with the requirements we have to meet. And I think public safety is doing a fantastic job.
Well, I am too, and every time I say something about it, you come back with that same thing. I think I've been very clear. I'm very supportive of public safety. I'm supportive to the point that I want them to have all that they need to have.
Mr. DeWar. Okay. And I'm not coming back at you. I'm telling you, as your city manager, what we're doing, and then updating you about the vacancies we do have, and the fact that there are quite a good number of qualified people who want to come work for public safety.
That's wonderful. We need them. We absolutely need them. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Anything else?
Nope.
All right. We're going to be adjourned a second time.
There we go.